Hello and welcome to Conduit Conversations, bringing you pioneers at the cutting edge of social change. I'm Paul Fonsale, co-founder of The Conduit, a home for people passionate about positive impact. This episode is part of a special mini-series produced in collaboration with Bloomberg Businessweek, bringing you sustainable finance and leadership for a changing world. I'll be hearing from some of the thought leaders speaking at the Bloomberg Businessweek Good Business Festival held at The Conduit on topics including clean air, the future of energy, reimagining cities, and sustainable supply chains.
I think people are only now starting to understand all of the potential impacts that air pollution has on them and their families. One case that has really brought the attention of it to many people, especially in London, is of a little girl called Ella Kisai-Debra, who died from an asthma attack in 2013. And her mum has done a huge amount of campaigning around the exposure of school children, and especially people who live and go to school on very busy roads in London.
My guest today is Jane Burston, Executive Director of the Clean Air Fund, a global re-granting institution funding projects to improve air quality. Previously, Jane worked as Head of Climate and Energy Science in the UK government, responsible for the UK greenhouse gas inventory and a £45 million science programme. As Head of Energy and Environment at the National Physics Laboratory, she managed a team of 150 scientists working on air quality, greenhouse gas measurement, and renewable energy. She has been named as a young global leader by the World Economic Forum and as a UK Social Entrepreneur of the Year. Jane, welcome.
Hello.
Great to have you here. You've spent your career to date steeped in research and scientific discovery around air quality, greenhouse gas measurement, and renewable energy. Where did that passion come from?
I've always cared about the environment, actually, and I think probably the first formal position that I had was I was green officer in my college at university, where I ended up working on all sorts of things from getting students to do more recycling to greening the college's endowment fund. And it's a theme that's really carried through my career.
So you've worked at the intersection of climate science and public policy, and we're going to come on in a moment to your work at the Clean Air Fund. But to date, if you sort of look at your career and what you've accomplished, tell us some of the things that you are most proud of that you think have made the biggest difference.
So I was really proud at the National Physical Laboratory that we had a huge focus on the impact from the science being done. It wasn't, we weren't doing it for the theory's sake. And the main thing that I really enjoyed working on is methane emissions from industry, measuring them, supporting industry to set voluntary targets for reducing them, and developing the sorts of monitoring equipment that they could put in place. So if ever there was a large methane leak, they would be able to detect it.
And for people who are not totally au fait with methane, tell us why we should care so much about methane emissions in particular.
Methane has a really high global warming potential. So for every ton of methane that's emitted, it's equivalent in the short term to 85 tons of carbon dioxide. That reduces over its lifetime, but over a 100-year period, per ton of methane, it's 25 times as bad as carbon dioxide. So it's really important to reduce it and to focus on reducing it now, because the impact is so much over the short term. And especially in things like the oil and gas industry, because methane is part of natural gas, which is sold, the things that you can do to stop it leaking actually very often save money. So it's an obvious thing for businesses to do.
So I was just reading in preparation for our conversation some stuff on the impact of dirty air. And here are some of the stats. 7 million deaths each year are linked to the effects of air pollution, according to the WHO, making it the biggest environmental killer. Pollution kills more people than car accidents, diabetes, and dementia put together. Air pollution cuts short an astonishing 40,000 lives a year across the United Kingdom and costs the economy billions of pounds in healthcare costs on an annual basis. This strikes me as a cataclysm. And why do you think there is so little public outrage and attention on this issue, given these horrifying statistics?
It's truly horrifying, you're right. And the WHO, the World Health Organization, is calling it a public health emergency. The outrage is there. It's growing. I think people in particular are outraged at the exposure of babies and young children. There was a study done in the UK a couple of years ago looking at placentas in a London hospital, and all of the placentas that they looked at had air pollution present in them. So it's passing through to babies, and even in the womb, where babies are exposed to air pollution. And yes, there's huge numbers of deaths. You mentioned 7 million. That's outdoor and indoor air quality combined. There's lots of health effects in addition to that. So, for example, for children who are exposed as babies and as young children, air pollution affects the development of their lungs. It affects the development of their brains, and therefore can have a huge impact on their lives. If you think about it, little children are breathing much faster than adults. Apparently, the average kind of 10 to 12-year-old breathes twice as quickly as an adult, and the average baby four times more quickly. So they're taking on much more air per kilo of body weight. And very often, they're low down to the ground, which is where the sources of pollution in our cities are, because it's mostly cars. So, yeah, it's people are very outraged about the exposure that children have. I think why you ask, why are they not outraged enough? I think people are only now starting to understand all of the potential impacts that air pollution has on them and their families. One case that has really brought the attention of it to many people, especially in London, is of a little girl called Ella Kissai-Debra, who died from an asthma attack in 2013. And her mum has done a huge amount of campaigning around the exposure of school children, and especially people who live and go to school on very busy roads in London, and what needs to be done about that.
I've heard that there have been some really pioneering work done in China, in particular a kind of national celebrity in China who was pregnant and her child developed health complications in consequence of the air quality in China. And that led to an enormous outpouring of interest in her particular case and went viral, and a couple hundred million people listened to it. So where do we find those examples here in the UK? How do we do the David Attenborough moment for plastics in relation to clean air? And what do you think it will take for this issue to become viral and high up in public consciousness?
Well, I think we're already seeing many more programs about air quality. There's been a few over the last few months. And it's something that is getting in the news all of the time, especially in big cities. And as a consequence, the metropolitan mayors are focusing on it a lot more. I do agree with you. We need the kind of David Attenborough moment for air quality to really focus people's attention in, not just on the problem, but on what can be done about it. Because many of the actions do affect people's behaviour. So there needs to be public support for implementing solutions. It's things like having more electric vehicles in the cities, or much more active travel, walking and cycling, congestion charging, especially on the most polluting vehicles. There does need to be enough of an outcry that people are happy to accept those sorts of policies, and happy to vote for the mayors, local government and national government leaders that are going to implement them.
So let's wave our magic wand and say we get the outcry. That translates into the right kind of politicians with their pens poised to write the right kinds of laws. Give us a state of where the law is in the UK right now. Are the standards stringent enough, and are they being enforced with sufficient rigour?
The standards in the UK at the moment are from Europe. And Europe says that we should try and limit air pollution to 25 micrograms of particulate matter on average. And that's actually already 2.5 times what the World Health Organization recommends. And in many places in the UK, we're not meeting those standards. So you could argue that the standards aren't strong enough. And because we're already not meeting them, we're doing quite badly. The previous Secretary of State did say that the government would look to commit to meeting the WHO guidelines, and therefore Brexit would be strengthening rather than weakening our environmental standards in this area. But it's not clear what the current Secretary of State thinks about the issue and whether this is going to be a priority for the current government.
We need to work hard on raising public consciousness. Our regulations are not sufficiently stringent enough, and they are arguably not being enforced enough. So let's now talk a little bit about your work at the Clean Air Fund, because I know that you're in the business of solutions and trying to kind of advance the ball. So tell us your top three priorities, what you'll be working on, and how you intend to get us there.
So the Clean Air Fund is a philanthropic organisation. We're going to be making grants to projects all around the world, and focusing on lots of different ways of making change happen. We are very keen to make the impact of air quality on people's and air pollution on people's health clear, so that they can protect themselves, and so that they can advocate for solutions to the problem. So one example of that kind of project is working with doctors to talk about what they see, for example, lung surgeons, what they're seeing in the increases in the number of non-smokers who are coming with lung issues because of pollution. We're also quite keen to work with businesses and have them take leadership on the topic. So another project that we have funded is with the Confederation of Indian Industry, running a forum for CEOs of major businesses in India so that they can look to what they can do in their own supply chain and with their own employees, and also so that they can advocate with the government to show that actually businesses are very keen for this issue to be tackled as well as citizens.
The quickest route to improving air quality in cities, am I correct? It would be to remove vehicles from the road or electrify them. Is that the top priority?
In Western Europe, that is certainly the main contributor to air pollution, is vehicles, especially diesel vehicles. And yes, removing them from the road is the better of those two options. One of the things that people tend not to realise is that about 50% of the particulate matter from vehicles is tyre wear and brake wear. So even if the vehicles were electric, you would still be getting that particulate matter. Obviously, there's emissions coming out of the tailpipe that isn't particulate matter, so changing to electric vehicles fixes for that, so long as the energy that you use to charge, the electricity that you use to charge the vehicles, is from a renewable source and you're not just transferring the pollution to elsewhere. And I think one of the things that's a big shame about the push for cleaning our air in cities is that very few people focus on active travel, so promoting walking and cycling. There's quite a large focus on the shift to electric vehicles, when actually there's multiple benefits of walking and cycling to our well-being, our health, how pleasant our lives are, and how clean the air is.
Okay, so transport is one part of the solution. Use less cars. If you are going to use a car, make it not diesel, make it electric. And if you're going to power the cars, get them powered from sustainable sources. What's the next challenge?
I think in many countries, energy is a big one. About 2/3 of air pollution is from burning fossil fuels. So obviously some of that is in cars, which we've just talked about, but a lot of that is in the power sector, so energy for electricity. Coal is still being burned in many countries around the world, and not all air pollution is equal. So the particulate matter that comes from some sources is more toxic than from others. And the particulate matter from coal-fired power plants is carcinogenic. So it's very toxic for the people who are breathing in that air. And it tends to blow quite a long way because the chimneys are quite high. So it affects people not just in the neighbourhood of the coal-fired power plant, but all around the region as well. And we see that around Germany, where the emissions from the coal-fired power plants that are there are blowing across Europe.
So Western Europe's done quite well in shutting down coal-fired power plants, although there's some notable exceptions where some insanely seem to be, new ones seem to be commissioned. But we have existing coal-fired power plants in China and India that remain the big challenges. What are the strategies for shutting down existing coal-fired power plants, particularly when they're paid for and fully amortized, and even though they're an environmental problem, they're throwing off money and power?
Yeah, it's something that campaigners in lots of parts of the world are thinking about, because we need to reduce coal-fired power plants at the rate of 3 per week over the next decade in order to meet what the IPCC says is the right trajectory to get us towards a maximum 1.5 degree temperature rise by the end of the century. Often campaigners are using air quality as their main tool in the toolbox for campaigning, because there's a lot of people suffering in these countries in terms of their health, in terms of their productivity, because air pollution has a huge impact on the number of sick days that businesses are experiencing, in terms of the air that they breathe.
Final two questions. One is on hydrogen. I've heard you say that hydrogen is a potential solution in kind of our toolkit of clean air magic wands. Tell us a little bit about how that might work.
Hydrogen is an interesting energy source because for cars, you can fill up your car just like you would with petrol or diesel. So it doesn't really require any behavior change because the station would be quite similar, and the driving behavior could be the same. You have a similar kind of range, and it's also interesting potentially for use in homes for things like boilers and cooking. A couple of British companies are investigating how it could be pumped through the grid, and in a few places across Europe there's experiments where already 20% of their gas is hydrogen mixed in with natural gas. So it's something that actually could use the existing gas infrastructure, which otherwise we would have to stop using in the shift to renewable energy and electricity. And it's a potential use for renewable energy generating hydrogen when the renewable energy isn't being used, for example, wind power at nighttime.
So you just participated in a panel here at the Conduit on clean air, and I'd like to know what your most interesting takeaway or insight from that conversation was.
Well, the panel was about, it was part of the Good Business Festival. And the most heated debate that we had was about the role of business in helping to fix air pollution. I feel that businesses could go a huge amount further than they're going at the moment, take leadership on this issue. The number of businesses that have stepped forward with really leading solutions, you could count on the fingers of one hand. And you also see businesses only doing what they're required to by regulation rather than supporting governments by taking the first step. So I think that the biggest insight for me is the huge amount more that businesses need to do, both in terms of their own supply chain, but also innovation and their own advocacy with government about what kinds of regulation they are looking to see.
Jane, we're very excited to be able to be of some support to the Clean Air Fund, and you have just launched in New York to great acclaim. And we look forward to having you back in a year's time to be able to report on your tremendous successes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Conduit Conversations, produced in partnership with Bloomberg Businessweek. Feel free to subscribe. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. For more information on The Conduit and our community of changemakers, please visit theconduit.com. To learn more about Bloomberg Businessweek, please visit businessweek.com.